Hello and welcome to Rewatchable episode number 282 for Sense8 112, I Can't Leave Her, the finale of season one. And not only is it the finale, we also have a special guest from our hypeable family here with us today. Before we get into all of that, if you want to reach us, we have some contact info for you. Our email is rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @re_watchable. Our Tumblr is rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we also are on Podchaser now, which is podchaser.com/rewatchable. I know Danielle's probably pimped that out a couple times, so feel free to check it out if you want another way of seeing what we have going on. So our new host to Rewatchable is Nassim. Nassim wrote a wonderful doc that we talked about, a feature on Hypeable, about the way you can censor season one of Sense8. Nassim, on top of a fun fact, I want to ask you this question personally. Are you planning on doing a season two of that feature again?
I think season two is there.
You already had it done. Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's there. I can double check, but as far as I remember, it's there. But thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk about this show. I love it so much.
Yeah, no, we're so happy to have you, and I've heard so many great things about you, so I'm sure you're going to love joining our crazy Rewatchable crew. And yeah, definitely, if you have a fun fact of anything, that's something else we do in the show so that people can get used to our voices. So you're our other super fan. I am the first as well. So what's going on in your life? What's interesting?
I just had a really exhausting day, so I got a mango smoothie, and that was my way to treat myself. And then I saw an Oreo cupcake, so I also got that. And now I feel a little bit sick, but I'm really happy.
That sounds awesome. Oreo cupcake as in, like, is it just flavored like chocolate and then the frosting on top?
It's like chocolate, but I'm pretty sure it has coffee as well. And then the frosting is Oreo, and then there's a huge Oreo on top of it. It's beautiful.
That sounds fantastic. Great. Anything including Oreos is like my favorite thing ever.
Yes.
And then we also have our two newbies on this episode, Brittany and Caitlin. Caitlin, what is going on in your sports world? I heard you talking about some of that, unless you had something else you had going on.
My fun fact was not going to be football related because I don't want to talk about it. But my baseball team, the Braves, clinched their division this weekend, and they were supposed to be terrible this year. So I'm just riding the wave and enjoying whatever comes of it.
That's great. Yeah. I'm happy for you. Not that I really get it all the way, but I know the concept of a team being better than you thought they were going to be. So that's cool.
My Twitter feed is just like all posts and videos of celebrations because feels.
Yeah, I saw some of those before and I was like, I think I know what Caitlin's fun fact is going to be about today. That's great. And Brittany, what's your fun fact?
My fun fact is that I have a work trip coming up in a month, and I'm going to Germany, and then from Germany, I'm going to Paris and Scotland for some personal vacation. So I spent some of my afternoon trying to plan what to do while I'm there, but our dear Rewatchable friends have made me consider taking a London pit stop in the middle because I miss it, and they are going to all the places that I love. So I got a little bit derailed this afternoon in my planning, but I think I'm going to have to forego going back to London because I was just there not too long ago. And if anyone has any suggestions for what to do in Paris, let me know. Scotland I have covered because I lived there for a few months in college, but Paris is going to be new for me. So I think I might try the catacombs, even though I'm deathly afraid of enclosed spaces.
One of my favorite movies takes place in the catacombs, a horror movie, but I won't tell you what it's...
No. Not those type of suggestions. I don't want...
No, I'm not going to tell you about it because I know it would freak you out, but like, I thought I'd throw that out there that maybe after you might want to watch the movie for fun.
Always like, you should watch Taken, like right before I go abroad all the time. No. And I'm like, no, I don't.
Oh my God.
No, thank you. Like, I'm good.
If anyone's curious, the movie's called As Above, So Below.
That sounds great and comforting.
It's a really, spooky flick. It's like a found footage one, like Blair Witch Project. So if you like being motion sick, I guess. I have a lot going on in my life, so I'm just going to pick a fun one. My fun fact is that I can't get anyone to go see The Nun with me, and I really, really want to see it because I like the Conjuring series a lot, and I really liked when The Nun was in the last Conjuring movie. Now, there's a whole movie about her, and Thaisa from, if I'm saying her name right, Brett, from American Horror Stories, like the main character of that movie. She plays the main character. So that's pretty cool. I like her a lot. And I'm hoping that I can get someone brave enough to go watch it with me because it does look really scary and I'm ready for like a spooky fall time movie.
Why don't you go see it by yourself?
That's what I was going to say.
It's too scary. No, that's the thing. Okay. Like you need someone else to like laugh with while you're getting scared because else you feel like an idiot because you're just like jumping and then you have no one to like look at to be like, oh, I'm dumb. It's a thing. It's more of like an embarrassment than like a fear thing.
All I know about that series is what pop culture has told me and my 10-year-old sister who keeps asking me, hey, do you know Annabelle? As if she's like a friend of mine. Like, no, I don't particularly know Annabelle.
I had no idea those were in a series until this moment.
Yep, me either.
They just all look like generic horror movies. Random, but okay.
Yeah, I had no idea The Nun was part of something. I was just like, oh, another horror movie. This one's about a nun.
Come I mean, to Hypo Bowl for news about movies except for horror movies.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes I try and throw in some horror movie news stuff, but I know it's a particular taste, so I get it. Karen gets it. Karen gets it with me.
I would not brag about sharing movie taste with Karen.
No.
That is true. She does like some horrible movies out there. We're just not going to talk about Tremors ever again, Britt.
No, never again.
Mm-mm. I can't suffer it. I really can't. All right, and then without further ado, we're going to jump into the season finale of season one of our show, Sense8, I Can't Leave Her, pretty emotional episode, as they all are, but this one in particular, I thought. I wrote the doc this week, so my synopsis is, in this episode, everyone solves their problems with violence. Will flies to Iceland faster than it takes to get from Berkeley to San Diego. Punches, kicks, and gunshots happen, but all's well that ends well, because even though Will looked into Whisper's eyes, Riley drugged her lover up as they escaped Bywater. So that's our synopsis for a lot. I didn't really go into all of the Wolfgang stuff there because I didn't know how to make it cute because it's not cute. It's just a lot of shooting people. We're going to jump into that discussion first. Wolfgang decides he's going to shoot down all of the people in his uncle's house. And in doing so, he kind of gets trapped at one point and is in need of Kala's help. So we see her for sort of the first time, other than, I guess, when she then also wakes up Riley in this episode, use like her chemistry skills as everyone else has used theirs. So let's concentrate on kind of, I guess, a sort of a positive there that Kala is getting more action in terms of doing important things for other people that are across the world. That was kind of cool. Of course, yeah, she was helping Wolfgang kill a lot of people. So do you remember your first reaction to this whole shootout scene?
I think originally I felt kind of disappointed in him because I was hoping that he would, I don't know, I guess learn a bit more of how to solve his problems in a different way. But on the other hand, I think there is some really important character development that happens here, especially with him kind of realizing that just because he's decided to do this doesn't mean that he's alone now. I got the sense that he kind of went into it being like, okay, I'm cutting these people out of my life forever, like the Sense8s, because I made this choice. And then Kala shows up anyway, because they're still connected, and he has to deal with that. He's not alone. And I think that's a very kind of big moment for him. Also, I think after watching this many times, and I guess in retrospect, after watching the whole show, I kind of really enjoy this scene now. I just really hate his family.
So you think they deserved the gruesome deaths that they got?
Yeah.
Some people just need killing.
And his speech is so good here. Like, this guy's acting is just amazing. I just love the way he looks at his uncle is absolutely chilling. It's amazing.
Yeah, I remember when I first watched it that the shot that stood out to me was what I think is meant to, where Wolfgang is shooting his uncle, and it's just like, it's showing you every stage of quick death, and it's very, like, shocking, because you typically don't really see someone shoot the other in the face as many times as Wolfgang does here. That was a lot. Did this disturb you, Caitlin, or how do you feel?
I'm far more disturbed by the fact he killed his father when he was a child.
Yeah, that's a pretty big point for Kala, too, it seems, because she's not able to really cope with all of what she's learning about Wolfgang all at once. She looks at him and kind of just can't help but just cry for his soul, because she's so upset at the monster that he's allowing himself to be. He's been, you know, murderous for a long time now, but he's continuing to, like, become more into it by, like, serially murdering a lot of people. Sure, they maybe had it coming. It wasn't exactly in very cold blood, but it was decently cold blood, I'd say. Do you think, Caitlin, though, that Kala is going to forgive him for this, or is their ship done?
I mean, I don't think she should, but I bet she will, because she makes terrible choices.
Oh, yeah.
I see where you're coming from. I'm not going to argue against it, because a lot of it's going to be no comment, but yeah. I guess, as Mai would say, more threesomes, less fights. So shout out to you, Mai. Brittany, this is a lot of action going on. Do you like a lot of action in a TV show?
No. No, no. I do not. But I will say that I didn't mind it as much in the context of this show, mainly because I think we've seen some action before, and it is a finale where a lot of plots needed to be set into motion, and the only way to set the plots into motion is to actually have motion and a lot of action. I didn't feel like the end, I loved the ending shot, but I didn't feel like it complemented everything that was going on so far in this season so well, mainly because there is, like, there's still so much that needs to go on that they can't just all sit calmly on the boat. Like, there's a lot of things still moving, and it just felt very out of balance. Like, I was expecting there to be more.
Yes.
Than what it was. So, like, you know, there's, like, Wolfgang, like, I don't think he would have been on that boat at the end because of just where his head is at. And, you know, I don't think that, I think Cassius and Sun would have been able to be there, but I don't know. It felt very disjointed and not resolved, which I guess is a good thing because I'll have season two to go right into, but I just have a feeling that they're pumping the brakes too soon.
I mean, just think about us when we just finished watching season one and we didn't know if there was going to be a season two, and everyone kept saying it was about to get canceled, and that was the last shot. That was all we knew. It was horrible. It ends very cliffhangery.
I don't even feel like it's a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
it feels
exactly.
Like it's bad writing.
Yes.
Like, it's bad pacing.
I didn't feel like it. Exactly. I agree too. I didn't feel like it was a cliffhanger because, like, yes, there are many, many unanswered questions, and that, I mean, that's natural. So for any show, that even if they are writing towards a conclusion, I feel like there's always going to be unanswered questions. But with this, it just felt like,
just ended.
Yeah, that shot, they were trying to put a bow on something that didn't need to, like, they needed, like, another hour in there to, like, yeah, even just get everybody on the boat. Basically, they needed an hour to get everyone on the boat and make it make sense that everybody was on the boat.
It felt like a penultimate episode, not
exactly.
Yeah.
And I think we had the opposite problem in Buffy, where we were like, this is like a finale instead of the penultimate episode. And then you just have, like, an episode that happens. But yeah, I agree. I wasn't too keen on it, but all that said, it was a lot for an episode, and there were many, many great moments, and I think we did get a lot of answers to some things and then set up more questions for others.
I'm so glad you said that, Brittany. I was sure I was going to be the only one, like, unhappy with where it went. So I'm glad I'm not.
I think for me, when I first watched it, I was riding off the high of where we end up with Riley, because I was so proud of her. I was so proud of her for getting up in the snow. And we will talk more in depth about the action that gets Will and Riley to that moment. But I feel you on the ideas of it not being the best writing for the also strange feeling you get that there's an episode coming that came out before the second season, kind of in the middle, called Happy Fucking New Year that we're about to get into. I think it's like an hour and a half long. And it shows the aftermath, of course, of like what happens here. So that's kind of like the more finale episode concept, I think, that they were presenting. Like, I think we knew. Did we know in the scene that the episode was coming? I feel like we did when that was season.
I don't think we did initially. I think it was announced later, because I remember being in an absolute panic as soon as it was done and finding nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I won't say to anything it resolves or whatever else, but I mean, it's an hour and a half long, so it has plenty to explore before we delve into season two. You still have like a bumper is what I would say. Like, that was meant to be the bumper between season one and season two to carry over you, because I think like they must have thought that they didn't give you enough, and they're like, we can't really commit to a full season yet. We don't have enough footage. So why don't we just give them a little taste so that everyone doesn't just drop off the show from the lackluster ending we gave them in season one.
Okay, so that episode happened, and then another bunch of episodes got released?
Yes. No, just one. Just the upcoming one. It's like an hour and a half long, though.
Yeah, yeah, like... No. But I'm saying that is not the season two premiere that you could then go right into the whole season. Okay, I didn't know that, which is why I'm asking for more clarification.
Right, definitely, yeah.
But it does feel like it, I think. So, yeah, I don't know. Sensei has always been kind of weird. I feel like there's secretly some kind of fight between the studio and the Wachowskis. So,
yeah.
After this, they were probably like, let's just film this and see what we can do with it.
You're saying for Happy Fucking New Year, right?
Yeah, because, I don't know. It's kind of an odd choice. Why not include it all as part of the same thing?
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like I said there, Nassim, even, I think it's literally just a response to how the newbies feel right now, that it's like, that's it? Like, shouldn't there have been more, I don't know, resolution? Like, we still have a lot of action going on. All of a sudden, they're just on a boat. Like, Wolfgang just killed everybody in his family, and he's just pretty cool about it now, all of a sudden. It's definitely lacking, like, the setup, I would say, because... Yeah, like a lot of characters are just hanging right now. They didn't really have any final things to do. Everybody else just kind of shows up to help out Will and Riley, but they don't have like their final thing to do in this season. It was kind of more spread out for the last couple of episodes. So that's always been weird to me, that they only show every other character for those brief moments here because they have to, but not because they are doing it like they should, in a way.
I don't know. Frankly, I kind of like it. I kind of like that Sensei doesn't do the predictable pacing that other shows do. I can also see why you would say it's bad writing, but I don't know. I felt like it was very realistic because you go, I don't know, that's kind of how life happens. You have these pauses where nothing really happens, but that doesn't mean that the story is over. You know, I don't know. I kind of liked the way that they did this.
I could see that, but I think it just didn't make sense for certain characters. I don't think Wolfgang's in a spot where he can pause right now at all. He needs to move because he just shot up an entire house. So like his involvement in this episode, I think the placement of the storyline that was going on the entire episode versus him at the end of the episode just felt very non-harmonized in a way. I kind of get how everybody else could be helping. Like, you know, you have Will and Riley and Nomi who are very much in the thick of what's going on for the larger plot of this episode. And we didn't see Son or Caffeus and what they're doing. You know, their other stories weren't shown at all. So like you kind of they float in and out. And like Sun says, like, nope, that's all I have to do. Okay, bye. Like, and kicks the door and kind of just like lets Will take over from there. But yeah, I think it was mainly Wolfgang. And I think it might be because I'm so invested in Wolfgang. Like, I think he's, as I've said many times on this podcast, he's probably my favorite storyline that's going on. And I think I just needed more with the aftermath of the shooting than I got for me to feel like, oh yeah, sure, he's totally got some time to drive into a helicopter. But I think that scene made perfect sense for his character, especially with what he's going through right now. He's like, what else do I have to lose right now? I could just drive if I could shoot up my family, I can drive into a helicopter. But
without the personal, like, I guess, physical risk, but in a way they're like, if one of the sensates dies in your group, you feel it like it's you're a part of yourself. Yeah, no, I don't know.
I don't think it was because of the, like, he's not afraid to die. It was more of a, he's not afraid to not turn the wheel because he knows, like, they won't die because Whispers won't kill them. So it's like, it's a game of chicken and he has the resolve to play that game.
Yeah, he does for sure. Let's get into some of the action then that happens after the action. Because during all this, we're having a flashback to a full flashback, I should say, to Riley's losing of her baby. She is driving through the mountains that we will end up at in a little bit with Will driving away in the ambulance soon enough. And it's snowing a lot, and her husband continues to look over, and I hate this in TV shows, to try and give her his jacket because she's cold. And he, like, is not even caring, or she isn't either, that they are, like, running off the road as much as they are. They're just not paying attention because they're so worried about the birthing of the baby. I get it. I really do. The contractions are coming. But, like, you're in the middle of a really bad snowstorm in the mountains. If I was the husband, I would hope that I would be like, you literally just need to, like, sit because I can't do anything for you in these mountains, so I need to get you to a hospital. But seeing the scene, like, every time I watch it, I always just hope.
Wait. You're mad at Riley in this scenario?
No. Husband. Because, here, let me finish this. Every time I watch this, I hope that from his casual attitude and the way that he's driving, that he's going to survive, that he's not going to crash it. Because he doesn't act like he has anything to be worried about in the outside world. And I don't know, maybe I've never really been the husband of a woman actively giving birth in my seat next to me. But I feel like I would have more resolve to be able to pay attention to the road. I feel like I would know in a blizzard that was a more important thing to do. It's so tragic. And I'm feeling for Riley. So I'm trying to put, like, logic and reason into where it is, or trying to put the blame somewhere. But in the end of the day, I know it was a very much life or death situation. But Brittany, you seem to have some feelings about this scene.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The way you were spinning your thoughts in the beginning, I thought you were mad at Riley for being in labor.
Oh, no. That was very confused. She was, like, dying from those pains. Yeah, well, that's what
I thought you were
horrible.
I thought you were saying when you were saying, can you just stop and be quiet? I thought you were saying that to Riley.
Oh, no, the husband. No.
And I was like, okay, no.
Hell no.
No, I have.
Uninduce your labor, please.
Yeah, I'm like, bitch. Wow. No. I have no contradictory thoughts to what you said. And I agree that also drives me crazy in any TV show where, like, the person driving is clearly just staring, not at the road. And I agree. Like, pay attention. It's a very bad snowstorm. If anything happens, it's going to be tragic. And it is tragic in this case. And wow.
I found that, like, oddly effective because we knew they were about to crash. Yeah. So I was just waiting for, oh, this time he turns his head and takes off his jackets when they're going to crash. Oh, when he does this is when they're going to crash.
It was very, like, waiting for it. You're like, come on, when is it going to happen?
Yeah, it makes me sick to watch the scene because that anticipation is horrible. I think that's what it is. Nassim, for me too, is a super fan that every time I watch it, it's not knowing what head turn it's going to be, not knowing what point in the conversation, because they're kind of talking casually, so you can't really mark it in your mind by they had a major character revelation and then the crash happened. They're just, like,
chit-chatting about the pregnancy in a way, and all of a sudden, like, he's just dead.
You're just like, oh, we shouldn't have gotten midwife. That was so stupid. Like, we should have gone to the hospital to begin with. I was like, all right, I get your argument here, but also you're about to die. Can you please cross the road?
Yeah, fun fact, when I started this show, I started it because I heard that it was really good, and I actually clicked the wrong episode, so I started it from this episode.
Oh, no.
So I was extremely confused. And then when I actually, it was like right after the accident. I think that's when I realized something was off. So then I started over and I watched the whole thing still without realizing what had happened. So in my head, I never understood that Riley had lost a husband or lost a child all the way up until this episode. Even though I'd already watched it beforehand.
That's funny. So
this episode was quite traumatizing for me because then all the dots kind of connected suddenly. And I don't know, it's still really hard for me to watch. It breaks my heart so much. And I know that her husband was not maybe the smartest in the scene, but he was just such a nice guy.
Yeah, I think that whole horse thing really happened where he in Riley's world. In this fictional world, that he came through on a horse to her campus to pick her up. And that's why he was literally her knight in shining armor. But apparently he was better at riding horses. I'm not going to make the joke. I'm holding it in.
No.
I started it. No, that's in bad taste. I feel sorry for her and I feel really sad about it. So
I have a very hilarious and classic Britney newbie confession to make.
Okay.
Even through watching this entire episode, I was like, well, that person in the car and this person on the mountain is not Riley. It's like her twin and another.
Yes, that was what that I thought.
We haven't met yet because I'm like, because Riley, like, kind of has it a little bit more together than I think she would. I was giving her more credit. I was like, not credit, that's a bad choice of word, but I was thinking, like, wow, if all of this stuff happened to a person, like, Riley wouldn't have been able to become a DJ or something. I don't know why. I just couldn't see that they were the same person. In my mind, they were just so isolated from one another. And I think that's kind of on purpose. I think Riley with the bleached hair and blue streak has isolated herself from this other life because, you know, it's so traumatic. And what are you going to, like, that's a lot for one person to go through, like, so much. And, you know, I just watching it the whole time, I'm like, when are they going to, like, reveal that these are not the same person? Like, what is happening here? Like, is the dad a key here? Did I miss a picture in the house where there were two of them? And, like, cause I really thought that Riley was going to die on that mountain.
That's interesting. Sorry. I'd made the connection to Riley. I was like, no wonder she uses so many drugs.
That's fair.
That's what my mom said. My mom spent the entire first season upset at how many drugs Riley was doing. and then when this happened, she was like, oh, okay, I understand now. I would probably do the same thing.
I mean, it all makes sense and really does inform the character of Riley that we've come to know. But at the same time, I'm like, there has to be a twin. It has to be a twin. It's never a twin. I watch so many procedurals. It's never a twin. Like,
well, I mean, this show tries to shove so many genres into one show that soap opera seems logical.
Yeah. Not just in the sense of Leto's acting.
Yes.
That's funny because that's what Smash got called a lot too. And I'm starting to see the connections. I never really got it when I was watching that show, but I get it now. When you shove a lot of genres together, it just becomes a soap opera because you're like, I don't know what to make of this. Evil twins popping up everywhere, or I guess not in Riley's case. Yeah, I could see it though from like her different hair color. Like this is Nega Riley. I don't know.
Like, Brittany, it's a dye job. It's a person can dye their hair.
Well, I think it shows what a good character she is because I don't know, we see many characters with dark pasts, but there's something about Riley and the way that her story is framed and how kind of soft-spoken she is that really your connection with her feels strong throughout the whole thing. But when you see this whole experience, you just love her so much by the end of this episode.
Yeah, and I definitely thought, especially when we were first starting out, I kept saying that Riley's story was the most interesting to me, just because like you didn't know the whole story the whole time. And even with the flashes of the person giving birth, like, you know, and all this other stuff that's like kind of linked us to this trauma that happened in Iceland and why she won't go back. And when she is back, how she's comfortable yet uncomfortable, you know, it, when it all came to a head, it was like, oh, even though I thought that there were twins for a while, it was still that much more impactful.
Yeah. So poor Riley, she has to, give birth in this cold upside down car with many injuries, I'm sure, and a dead husband right next to her. And she has to catch her own baby. It's all shown once again. I don't even know at this point what's animatronic and what's real. I stopped questioning the science here. I just let it happen. And there's a scene where she even has to like search around for something to cut the umbilical cord with. Like, it's really just everything's there, even more so than the first births in a way. And as then she's holding her baby, I'm like, oh my God, wrap it up more, because yeah, it never feels like she puts the blanket around it enough in this scene. Oh my gosh,
cover that foot.
Yeah. Yeah, like every inch counts right there. Every centimeter. It's a tiny soul. Go ahead.
And you know what's going to happen. Yeah. And you see the baby and you know what's going to happen. And like, we never know when the baby actually dies. But there's like a moment, like every time I see it, I try and find the moment where she realizes it. I think I found it this last time and it's just so heartbreaking. Like, she just kind of, it's like the life leaves her. I don't even know. It's so sad.
Yeah, it is. And I can't imagine like having to like punch out the windshield and then like wander on the mountains. Although I think here, like, how come she couldn't just walk up to where she was? I guess they fell down like quite a lot, so she can't really get to that road again.
She literally has to give birth next to her dead husband in this car. That's what I couldn't stop thinking. Her husband is dead right next to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing though. Sensei like goes for the most like grueling graphic way of doing something. Like, even just emotionally grueling here. Like, it's a very, very heavy sequence. But like I said, like, the fact that she's still around today, yes, being a heavy drug user, made me really proud of her, because she often like says, yeah, I try to take my life. Iceland is not good for me. There's a curse on me, everything. So I commend her for continuing on amongst all this trauma. I can't imagine. It's even worse watching it again to newbies, because then you get to see her go to the graves, and then you have the realization that she's talking to the baby's grave as well as the husband's.
Yes. And when she's mad about the woman who told her that she had a curse, and she says, you let me think that this happened because of me. And then you realize, like, oh my God, she's not only talking about her mom. She thought the baby was dead because of her, and her husband was dead because of her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Ursa. Ugh. It's all such a mess, and I can't imagine. So Ursa does come back, actually, right here. We go back into some present-day stuff. Riley's like strapped down to a gurney, and they're trying to wheel her through and get her to where they need to go to do evil things. And Ursa shows up, assumedly in the sensate mind, and says, Riley, the only way you can protect your group is to kill yourself, just like your mother did. That's what you need to do. Mother being Angelica. So then, yeah, Riley grabs a gun and it feels like she's really going to shoot herself here. They get right on the edge of letting her do it, and then Will stops her just in time. And she's sedated again. So there's kind of like a bit of plot armor with the enemies here, because they can't kill our sensates, as we saw with, I think somewhere in the beginning of the season, maybe it was Wolfgang, somebody was caught and they got out because they couldn't be shot, I think, or something to that effect. So we see that again here is what I'm saying, that they've written in ways for our sensates to get into really like dangerous situations, but to not die because they can't be shot. Maybe that's even why Nomi survived when the lobotomized man was coming after Dr. Metzger. So it's a thing, and maybe I just opened up your eyes to it, Nassim, or newbies. Sorry if I've ruined a little bit of the structure for you, but I mean, I assume that some of you have already seen that kind of trend before in the show, and it just is what it is.
It's the Wachowskis. They literally had Neo dodge bullets.
That is the best. Yeah, that's a good point. I shouldn't have expected any less, I guess. So yeah, Kyla's able to come in here and make a mix of adrenaline and other chemicals to violently wake Riley up because Will's finally there. We'll have Will catch up to Riley in our discussion, but there's Kyla coming in with some of her... it's almost like they try and present our sensates as having some kind of superpowers. So I'll say that this is Kala's superpower, chemistry and or science. So good for Kyla. Good for her on getting Riley back up when she needed to, because I guess they needed to run. Any other thoughts on Riley's story, newbies, before we move on from it?
Can we talk about the first time that Riley and Will touch?
Yes, please.
Oh my God. I love it. Because
I was like waiting for it. I'm like, what? Because, you know, the whole time that they're interacting through their sensate connection. And so, you know, I'm like, what happens when they are physically in the same place? Like, that was a question that's been lingering. And so when they do touch it, that was so cool. Actually, I think all of their scenes were shot so cool. And like, but when they like are, when he touches her forehead, first of all, it took forever for him to touch her forehead, like forever. And so when he like pats her hair back, like that whole sequence of shots was just so really cool. But then there's another scene when they're escaping that I wanted to talk about, but I don't know if that's more of a Will discussion or a Riley discussion.
Yeah, no, we'll save it for like the Will stuff, because I'm kind of saving like the present day action for his, but yeah.
Well, then with Riley, like, you know, she is so out of it at that point that, like, you know, it makes sense that she's asking all these questions, like, she's talking to her dead husband in the ambulance transfer, and then, like, you know, she's seeing Will, but then, like, is Will there? Like, she can't make night or day, really, of anything that's going on because of her state, but that whole thing where they were finally together was, like, really, really cool.
Did you have any questions about that, Caitlin, too, or were you just, like, cool, they're seeing each other in real life?
Just going with the flow. Wasn't particularly noteworthy for me.
Yeah. I don't think it was for me either, which is funny. You think it would be, being a super fan, being like, oh, here's the first time they touch, but didn't faze me. I was like, cool. Because they've already had such an intimate relation.
Yeah, but they were in the same place, and yet, like, you know, there were still all of those, like, weird shots of like Will being on the table and Riley standing, and like Riley being on the table and Will standing, like, and like that was happening even though they were both physically like there. They were still like mentally connecting in different way. Like, it was sort of like it short circuited.
It just felt profoundly emotional to me. Like, I just love those moments. It's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
So much.
Well, because that's where I wanted to reference a scene where like Will's in the ambulance and then they have the shots of them on the top of the mountain. Like, all of those shots were just so cool this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean. Yeah. Like, I'm not sure who just said that, but like the short circuiting of it all was, was neat. I can see that now looking back at it. So yeah, now let's go into Will's story. I'm sorry, but just for organization's sake, we have to go a little bit back away from that action just to talk about Will's therapist that he has. And he's talking to Will as an adult, which I thought was a great way of a therapist to approach a child. I think it would help get a little bit more information out of them. But Will's not really giving any information because he's looking at Sarah Petrell and she's still hanging out, seemingly in a ghost or sense eight form. We're not really sure. And he doesn't say whatever he needs to because she's like, shh, don't tell him I'm here. So that is some help that he was meant to get to, I guess, stop obsessing over her or to get over the trauma of whatever he might have seen.
That was so creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The snow and everything, right? Like the snow theme in the whole episode
of it being
eerie.
I think I yelped when she shows up and is like, shh. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was very like The Ring, like, you know, like, yeah. Or Sixth Sense, you know, like where the girl,
I still don't understand the purpose of Sarah Petrel, to be honest.
Neither do I.
Okay.
Oh, don't listen.
I'm just so glad you said that too. No, for real. Because, okay, here's the thing. With this show, I don't mean to make this... I hesitate to say this. I'm going to hold back. I need to wait until we're at the season 2 finale to say what I really feel about other things. But yes, I'm with you. I'm with you here, Nassim. I don't get Sarah Petrel.
I think it would have been season 5. This is the thing that they were trying to tie out throughout the entire show, and then at the end it would be like, boom. And
so you're saying like you feel like there's other dropped things.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I like the Sarah Petrel scenes because they're always very creepy and the dialogue is really sharp in them. But also, I just feel like it's a very strange choice to give it so much screen time.
Yeah, and especially in the finale. Look, we're back at it, and yeah, they're not giving you any answers for it at all in season 1.
Yeah.
Strange.
I'd like to give us MVP to that therapist for calling out Will's hero.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, like being
spot
like,
on that one.
Always taking care of his alcoholic father and whatnot. Yeah, Will has, as many of you sensates, every sensate, has lived a pretty tumultuous childhood. So let's hope that they have better futures on the boat. I don't know. Yeah, the Will just flies to Iceland really quickly. He's like just shelling out like thousands of dollars for these last minute Iceland Air tickets. Like it's no big deal.
I mean, maybe last minute tickets are cheaper, aren't they? So if he was getting tickets for the same day, and Iceland isn't that far. I don't know. I'll defend like the Iceland show's logic.
I wasn't too concerned about the last minute ticket, but just the placement of, you know, him, the actual action of him going there versus like, you know, what he's been told in that therapy session, which is like you can't just sit and like wait around, like you feel the need, like you have to fix something, even if it's not helping, you know what I mean? It's the act of needing to be doing something even when it's probably not the right move. But is it the right move in this case? Honestly, I don't know.
Right, because now he has the Whispers eye connection.
Not only that, it's just like it could events have been set in motion in another way if he didn't go. It's sort of like, you know, the butterfly effect. If like it flapped its wings a little bit differently, would all of these events have transpired? But then again, if he stayed in Chicago, what could he have really done from there? They needed someone to take physical action.
And the thing is, they might have been able to right away to have Riley with a gun at her mouth to, I suppose, escape, like if she slowly crawled away. Because if they startled her, she could have pulled the trigger, so they probably would have let her escape if she wanted to. And then they could have had the other sensates tap in to try and get her out. And but that would have nullified Will's reason for coming here and then never given Whispers a way to get in. Although I guess they could have really just done that through Riley if they really needed to get that done.
Yeah, so, yeah, but I think, but they're playing to Will's character, which
definitely
makes, I mean, I have no qualms about Will going there and all of this happening. It's just an interesting thought experiment.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the argument too, and I think Adriana was coming about this from a bit back, but it seems like the show like wants to have like the white male protagonist, so it forces Will on you in a way, and it, I feel, does that a little bit here in this episode, because it feels like to me, like I was saying, like they could have had the sensate minds get her out of this rather than having just Will being like the main focus of the action. It's even like Riley takes a back seat to what he has to do here, I guess because she's mostly incapacitated. But
that was very noticeable to me in this episode, the kind of shoving white male guy to the forefront of everything.
Yeah, I mean, like with as diverse of a cast that we have, it really was like I was saying, like everybody else just doesn't have anything really to do. Like if we saw their physical lives and something else, like maybe it would have been nice to see like the Hakeem finale here, like make a 2-hour finale, show that fight going on here, and then maybe have something actually final happen in Nomi's life, or just the runaway that she had from Whispers or anything. I don't know. The timing is tough because they're all running away from like BPO, and BPO is just really ambiguous because they're taking a long time to move Riley, long enough that Will can be headed over there, and they know he's coming, but they still can't move her quick enough.
It's like all in Iceland. Like, how come they can't move quicker? The timeline never made sense to me of that whole thing. But I digress. Will is our white savior hero here in this episode. So take it or leave it. He's what does all of the things. I'm not sure what cars do when you move whatever that tube was, but it smoked and it ruined it, apparently. Sorry for your cars.
That was so funny. The men cannot stand seeing a beautiful car in trouble.
Oh, that was so great.
And when, like, the guy, like, Will is walking into the building and the guy comes up, he's like, "You gotta look." And the guy's like, "Oh my God." I just lost it. And Will even was like, "It's a really nice car."
Yeah.
What brain was it? I couldn't tell because I really didn't care.
It was very funny. And then they just played it up with even, like, you know, just everyone else just staring at the... They're not even, like, taking action at the fact that, like, what is this literal smoking gun doing here? or, like, Will's entrance into the building. They're all just like,
mourning.
Yeah.
Yeah, just another day in Iceland, I guess. I assume they were the BPO agents, too, because they were speaking with American accents, so... I think that's what we're assuming BPO is like, American accented men that are shooting you. Nomi then kind of comes in really quick to do some stuff. She's giving Will clearance to enter the hospital building using his phone to scan it in. And Will has to act.
The brightness being down and not being able to scan was the realest thing that's ever happened on television ever. Loved it.
Yeah, that happens to me literally every time I go to Chick-fil-A because they never can scan it because their scanner sucks. I don't know. I always have it up all the way. I'm like, "Just take it inside." They're like, "We can't touch it." I'm like, "Come on." I have to get my Chick-fil-A before they lobotomize her.
I loved it so much.
Yeah. So yeah, Nobi gets a little bit more focused than the other sensates here, but then she kind of just drops off after she's like, "I don't know what room you have to go in. You're the one that came in without an exit plan, so good luck." I'm like, you know what? Good for you, Nomi. Tell him as it is, because he does suck right now. He's not thinking clearly. I know he has to get this done, so whatever, and he does, but I like that she gave him back a little bit of snark for it all. Then Sun does a little bit of... fighting on top of the building's floors where she knocks off some guys off of the, I think she threw some over the railing or she just kind of kicked
so
them.
Badass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She said it was cool. She always does a lot of good stuff. I've always liked Sun. She's always been my favorite sensei. I say that I might've said someone else before, but I'm sticking with Sun. and then Leto comes in and he has a cute scene where he does an arguably really good job about finding out what room Riley is in by acting interested in one of the nurses by being like really like the smolder to her. That was kind of cute and fun.
When he winked at Will and Nomi, that was the best.
Yeah. I like Leto's action here. It's fun and it's brief, but it brings in the idea of needing to be an actor. So check, they did that. And then Kafius does jump the ambulance. It's funny that he's not the one doing the whole like runaway driving thing. Cause you think that would have been totally his stuff, but they want to give Will once again, the full white savior complex deal here. So they let him do it as opposed to Kafius, which feels a lot stranger now that I notice it. But he does jump the ambulance because he says that as many times as the Van Damme has been stolen, you learn how to jump it in interesting ways. And apparently that was easy. You could give me any car and make it the easiest one to jump ever, and I would never be able to do it. So good on you, Kafius. Yeah, more car stuff. See, I just kind of just goes right over my head. But as we're doing this escape, there's a scene where they're in the elevator. Riley's hiding in the corner. Will's looking out into the glass to make sure there's no threat. And then Whisper catches Will's eye, meaning that he's able to have access to not only Will, but apparently all of our sensates. I need you to question the science here, newbies. What does this mean for the rest of our crew now?
Well, obviously trouble because Will finds that it's best to keep himself drugged so that Whispers can't gain access to anyone else.
Which is super confusing because we were talking in a previous episode, like, how are they all visiting Riley if she's unconscious? And we're like, well, maybe it doesn't matter. And then in this episode, they're like, well, if she's unconscious, we can't visit her. Yeah. Like, what?
Yes. Yes. Nassim, do you have an answer for us? Me neither. I don't know. I can't at that point. I'm out.
Like, I get the idea because, like, Whispers has access to Jonas, and then through Jonas, he could basically tap into anyone else, but he can't get to Will because Will's not part of Jonas's cluster. So, like, that kind of makes sense to that part. Like, that makes sense to me. And so I would assume that then if he could get to Will, then whatever. But yeah, I agree. I don't know how anyone has access. Like, they could get to Riley when she's unconscious, but they can't, Whispers can't see Will when mm-hmm. he's unconscious.
What do you, I'm confused about the question though.
Like, how are they able to visit Riley when she's medically comatose, unconscious, and then they're not able to have Whispers visit Will when he's the same?
Last episode, a bunch of them kept popping into Riley's room, and
she's not alone, right? And Will's rubbing her hand.
No, I have an answer, but we need to watch season two first.
I'm hoping I'm just forgetting something really obvious because it really feels like a stretch to me right now. Maybe it's something to the effect of, like, if I had a guess, because I literally don't remember. The group itself is always able to visit whether or not they're unconscious, but if someone else is coming in.
But Nomi says, like, she can't, like, suddenly she can't get to Riley or Will, and she's thinking they must be unconscious.
Hmm.
I think it's like semi-consciousness, though. And also there's an, I don't know, like...
Maybe retconning, I remember now.
And I also think you... But I also think that if they're dreaming, it's a bit different. I don't know. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a stretch.
No, I see where you're coming from. I think they see the problem that you're seeing newbies here because... I don't know how else they can fix it without a retcon, honestly. Like, they need to, because there's nothing else you could do to explain this. Because, yeah, like, you now have this threat of Whispers being able to come into their lives. So you have to figure out how you can have them visit Riley but not Will during that. I don't know. Just wait and see if they fix it. Maybe
Whispers can't visit Riley.
No, I'm saying her cluster could have when she was unconscious.
Oh.
Yeah, retconning is the only answer I can really think of, like, a solution for all this. So maybe we'll find another way around it. I'm trying to hold some faith here that we can. We'll wait until season two. We can decide then. So we then start the chase scene where there is Will and Riley in the ambulance and Whispers with some other BPO agents in a helicopter. And it's decided that after there was a discovery that helicopters can only see when there's clear weather, you need to drive through fog to hide from them. So there's that Wolfgang taking over the wheel thing that happens that then leads Will into the fog. But unfortunately, as they avoid Whispers, we run into Riley's horrible trauma. She's stuck and she has to get out and she wants to die in these mountains because that's where she was meant to, kind of going back to the whole curse idea. We didn't really see how she got out of the mountains. I think we're just meant to be like, cool, she got out. Weird.
No, they explain it.
In this episode?
No, in a past episode when she's, I only noticed it when I rewatched, but when she's talking to Ursa was the one who saw her and called the ambulance or whatever.
Really? Oh, okay. Yeah. I will believe you. Thank you for
I remember there was like a flashback to like a helicopter rescue or something.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she said something like that she saw her and she found her.
Yeah, that makes sense then, because I don't know, wouldn't it have helped the viewer to have that again? Because it's not like they're not afraid of putting the same flashback into different episodes. They do here, right? We've seen a lot of this flashback. Maybe putting the whole picture together for us would have helped to see it
really just like consecutively happen, like this, then this, then this, or sequentially, I should say. But
well, also we're watching it week by week.
Yeah,
probably,
as opposed to binging all the
one weekend.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much how I watched the show when it first came out. So it's just the way it goes. Yeah, so then we're in the fog, and Will figures out that as Whispers is talking in his head, he needs to medicate himself, as we were just talking about, to avoid Whispers. So he does. Did we see Kala do anything here to give him the drugs, or did he just figure it out on his own?
No, he did it all by himself. All by himself.
This seems kind of weird.
He totally has a dark past. He was like a problem child, wasn't he?
So you're seeing it as being like he knows.
I don't know if he was a problem child. He was like an antagonist to his dad, but not in a way that like
he would be Wolfgang.
Yeah, or Wolfgang would be dragging his father's corpse into a car and lighting it on fire. Like he wasn't that much of a problem child. He just like ran away a couple times.
On a scale of Will to Wolfgang, yeah, how much of a problem child were you? Right.
And it's the opposite on a scale of Wolfgang to Will. How bad of a white male lead are you? I don't know. How bad of a hero complex do you have?
How bad are you at communicating?
Yeah, probably that. How bad are you shoving your way into everyone's lives and just setting everything for them? Anyways, I'm sure Will has some redeeming things we're not talking about. I know. We pick at the show because we love it, everyone. We're not doing it because we hate it.
Will. I mean, it's the writers put him in the white protagonist role. It's not his fault. He's Will. Like,
right. He doesn't ask for it. He's just...
Yeah. That's what the creators chose to do, but it doesn't make Will a bad character.
No. Yeah, I think he has good intentions. That's the thing. Even here, he's trying to do well, and he's a little bit dramatic, I'd say, in the way he acts and how quick he makes his decisions. He feels that he needs to get the things done. Maybe that's okay. Maybe things wouldn't have gone right if he didn't act so drastically here in this episode of flying over. Maybe it was all needed to happen. I don't know. I think I can wrap up that point by saying I think I would have written this all very differently once again. But they did what they did. So we have to kind of just accept the story for the way it is. And that Will needed to be, I guess, the main character to do all of the action here. Nassim, you were saying something?
No, I wasn't.
Brittany?
I was just trying to talk you off your ledge, but you went there anyway. You were too far gone.
Oh, no. Well, here, give it to me now. Pull me back up. Lend me a rope.
Oh, no. You were just restating everything we've already unpacked about Will and being in this role. And it's not like we're placing a lot on Will as by saying like, oh, white male protagonist, like, yes, that's a writing problem. That's not a, like, Will as a character, as a fully formed existing person, like as a character on the show, is not thinking in his head, I'm gonna be the white male protagonist and do all of this. Like, that's not in his thought process. So we're putting that on him, which we should in a cultural perspective standpoint, but not as a, that's not a motivation for his character.
Right.
So, I just wanted to talk you back from that, but you were there. You got it.
No, I feel that. I like that. I like that point. So moving on from what type of character we define Will as, the action goes as follows. Will is like, back in the ambulance, all drugged up. Riley's still out on the hill. She wants to die. He's like, hey, come drive this ambulance. She's like, no, she's stuck on the snow memory. And then he's like, here, take this inspirational magic word, whatever he told her. I love you, kissed her, whatever it was. He got her back up. She drove. We're all good. We go right into the boat sequence that we've been talking about. So good on Riley for getting up. And I suppose Will just have to be comatose for now. And that's going to be that. That's it. It cuts off right there. It doesn't really show you anything else that you want, as
something
we've talked about.
Interesting about this that I didn't notice until, again, I was watching it with my mom. Apparently watching things with your mom really makes you think about it deeply. Was that what's so important about this scene is that Riley, in reliving her accident, gets to finally save someone.
Mm-hmm.
When before she was completely unable to save anyone who was involved, and this is, she relives it and she kind of fixes the memory, I guess.
Would it not have been a more powerful scene, though, if we actually saw Riley doing the driving?
No, I kind of actually like that we didn't, because I don't, there was so much action that leaving some action up to the imagination was actually, I didn't mind that. Like, I didn't need to see Riley get up and make her way to the car with triumphant music playing. It's just, you know that she did it.
Yeah.
She got up.
I wouldn't have minded, like, just a shot of her standing up and then cut to the boat or something.
Right. Something that just felt a little bit more cohesive, like glued it together, I think.
Like, I think that actress is strong enough. They could have done something interesting, like see the moment something changes for her. And I think it'd be interesting to, like, just see her face and what changes. And then maybe she gets up and then we go to the scene where we fade in on Will in Riley's lap.
Yeah, that would be nice. I see the moment. I saw it play out actually as you were describing it. It was beautiful. I'll keep it headcanon. I wanted to talk briefly then about what the newbies are excited about for the upcoming season, or what you just simply want resolved. I put in some talking points in the doc. I want to open the floor for both Brittany and Caitlin to open it up to say, what interests you? What are you looking for a resolution in the next season?
Literally everything.
Yeah.
Pick like a top two if you want, either of you or both of you. That's fine.
Oh, I like that. Okay. So I am going to be interested in the fallout of Wolfgang dealing with the fact that he is never going to be alone. And, you know, I know he's going to have to figure out what to do about Felix, but, you know, just this idea that even though he wants to, like, we saw at the end of the episode before this, him sort of like saying goodbye to Kala and then like walking into the house and then her appearing, and he's just like, oh God, like, you know, not in like a bad way, like, oh, you're still here, but in a, you're going to see what I'm going to do and I don't want you to. I'm just interested in what that's going to look like going forward. The fact that, you know, despite what is going on with him and the actions that he's taken, there are these people who are connected to him and he can't get rid of them. And how is that going to change him?
I think
my top.
I would say my top two, son having to deal with the fact her brother murdered her father. And then Leto and Joaquin having the photos. I would assume he's going to release them at some point, and seeing how that all pans out for Leto and his relationship with Hernando and Danny and his career.
Yeah, I think that those two stories got pushed back a lot as we had to wrap up. It kind of makes sense. They reached a natural conclusion for where they're at. I mean, we don't get resolution, but they reached a natural, like, okay, we can stop here with these stories and leave them wanting more in order to wrap up some really like action-heavy stories that are driving the main engine of the show, which is, why are people hunting these sensates? What are the sensates about? What are these, like, what is all of this going on behind the curtain questions? But yeah, I'm more interested in the individual stories, like, Kala still has to, like, you know, marry Rajan, maybe, who knows?
Oh my God, I need her to get her shit together. I want to love her so much, and Mostly, I also want to strangle her.
I would like to see a whole episode about her dad running his restaurant. That would be nice.
Oh my God, can we get Kala's and Riley's dads together?
Yeah, can they hang out? Can the families hang out?
And Cassius's like, mom.
Like, Riley's dad plays ukulele for music in Kala's dad's restaurant. Like, how adorable would that be?
Oh, so cute.
I find Kala really frustrating, but I also think I identify with her the most because she's so frustrating. Like, when I'm frustrated at her, I feel like I'm frustrated at myself and all my bad choices.
Or a lack of choices. Because really her problem.
Yeah.
Kala could use with a little bit of decisiveness, couldn't she? Would help.
She needs to, like, get away and clear her head and think about everything, which, like, there's not much to think about. It's sort of like, I don't love this guy. She needs to make a choice here with that portion of her life. But then she needs to, like, figure out the whole Sensei Wolfgang situation as well.
I was going to say, I think her problem is she thinks too much and she doesn't act enough.
That's fair.
You know, I even thought that, like, Hafius' story ended on a very strange note here, because it's like the guy just, like, falls off his motorcycle into the pile of boxes, and then Hafius is just kind of done here. We're like, is that the final?
Fall off. He got hit by a bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever it was.
Falling off would mean, like, all of a sudden it's like one of those cartoon shots where his eye opens, you know? Like,
yeah.
He got Van Dammed.
He did get Van Dammed.
Or but damn band.
It felt like that one was just, like, kind of completely dropped because I felt like we needed a resolution there. This episode would have been fine. They've been doing a decent job at cutting between, like, at least six storylines, and then they just really shove it all on Will, Riley, and Wolfgang here, and they drop the other five. So I even forgot to include Sun in, like, what's going to happen next up, because she just doesn't have anything for a little bit. Yeah, I guess she will have to deal with that aftermath too, as you were saying, of her father and her brother, their interactions. Anything else that you guys wanted to talk about in this episode or of the upcoming season before we move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines?
I'm okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to go into yours first, Nassim, for your favorite scene. What did you pick for this episode?
Riley overcoming her trauma. I mean, I already said this, but the fact that she can finally save someone. I don't know. I really feel for her, and I think they did a really good job of kind of showing us how she breaks down, because after so many episodes of seeing her kind of pushed aside her own sadness, seeing it all just come out, it was really kind of a beautiful resolution in a way, but also because she's there with someone who can actually help her, even though I don't think Will really understands what she's seeing.
Yeah, and I mean, he does have that really hilarious thing too when he looks down and he sees himself as being pregnant, and he's just like, what the fuck?
I forgot about that.
That was cute.
When he was running up the hill right after that shot, I kept looking to see if he was still pregnant.
Yeah, it's almost a blink and you'll miss it moment. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was the lone appearance of my favorite boy, Cassius, popping in because he's precious. And honorable mention, because no one else mentioned it, was Sun coming in. And when Will's like, oh shit, four guards. And she's like, is that all? And just kicks ass. But
the shots there were amazing.
Yeah. But I have to give my mention to my boy, Cassius. I love him so much. He's so precious.
Karen will appreciate this reference. Sun saying that was very Mortal Kombat. Almost like a finish him. But I liked it. I thought it was epic too. Brittany, what was your favorite scene?
Because we're kind of keeping with the brief pop-in moments of other characters, I really liked when Leto just shows up and like, I'm like, what is he going to do here? Like, I was so confused. And then you see him in like the doctor outfit with like the little hairnet on and he's just talking, like sweet talking the doctor. And I love that in that scene that they didn't cut to Will doing it, because I think you just needed it to be Leto in order to buy what was going on. Because I mean, that woman was seeing Will, but I'm glad we didn't have to see Will.
Right.
Like, we just got him picking up the lab jacket, not actually watching the acting. And I think that that was super effective, because I think it would have made it so awkward to see Will trying to do that. So I'm glad that they just stuck with Leto.
Leto's awesome. Go ahead.
I don't even want to imagine that. It feels so awkward.
I know. I was like cringing the whole scene because I was waiting for it to cut to Will. And I'm like, no.
He does this little Zoolander pout, which somehow works for him. But for anyone else, it's just horrible.
Yeah, like he has very cute facial expressions where they're like really over the top, but they work for like his specific face structure. It's weird, but you're right. Like this, his blue steel or whatever it was. He had a lot of that, just like really dramatic, like kind of like looking at someone and squinting in a weird way, and that would look creepy and weird coming from someone else. But he just looks precious when he's doing it, and you fall for him. I think it's in his eyes. He has like these very beautiful, expressive eyes. Leto, I think, in terms of like talent, is my favorite because I really like how he turns on the charm like this. But I really like Sun's ambition is how I'd put it. Because yeah, her kicking people in the face is great, but her driving story of being angry, I like a lot. But another angry character from my favorite scene was Wolfgang taking the wheel, almost running into the helicopter. And I loved that it was just like a "but I know somebody who can" thing. And Wolfgang doesn't even, yeah, as we've discussed, think twice about driving as fast as he can into that helicopter. So good on you, Wolfgang. Into our favorite lines, Nassim.
And still you did nothing. Really good line from Wolfgang. Yeah. I don't know. I can't say more, but I loved it. It's a very powerful moment. And I don't know. Wolfgang is a character who holds himself very, I don't know. He's a very closed person. He doesn't show a lot of emotion. And in this scene, when he's kind of having that showdown with his uncle, it all just kind of comes to light. And it was really, really powerful.
Honestly, I always zone out when I watch that scene for some reason. It's like they just have that final confrontation for too long. Him and his uncle, I think, right? So I assume that this was Wolfgang saying to his uncle, "Why didn't you protect me from my father?" Right?
You need to keep watching.
Okay. I mean, I see where you're going with that as well. Yeah. So.
Yes. But yes.
Okay, great. And Caitlin.
Mine was shockingly also Wolfgang. When he goes, "How was I supposed to know he was wearing a bulletproof vest? Who wears bulletproof vests in real life?"
That is true. It's funny. It was like, I like when they're in movies and they're calling up things in the movies because it takes you out of the fact that you're watching a movie. It feels more real. So that was nice. Good breaking of the fourth wall-ish. And Brittany?
We talked about it a little bit before, but it was when all the guys are standing around looking at the car that's smoking in front of them and the one worker is just like, "It's only a year old, man." Like mourning the loss of the car.
Oh, that was so good.
I love the little burst of humor in the middle of all the tension.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is nice. And I think it works really, really well there. It was cute. And my favorite line was when Leto shows up to Will's mind and Will goes, "Do I know you?" Because they have like a certain familiarity toward each other. And Leto just goes, "Yeah, we had sex. It was very special." And I was like, "Oh my God." And Will's like, "No, why not?" And then I was like, "We have to concentrate here. Can you deal with this later?" I loved it. I loved it so much. It was great. And it's just like, it's also, I love how Leto says everything. I love how he says this so casually. It's so cute.
I'm always really curious about how Will interprets his own sexuality, mm-hmm. like before and after this show. I mean, I like that they don't really delve deep into it throughout the show. It's just kind of assumed, which is kind of refreshing. But I'm so curious. Did Will consider himself straight, or has he just, I don't know. It's very interesting.
Well, according to my Will Diego ship, probably not.
Oh. I mean, I think the canon is that they're all pan. Like, that's what the writers have said.
Right, because they're just kind of all mind-banging each other, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I don't blame them. If I was in that situation, I'm pretty sure it would change the way I interpret many things.
Well, yeah, definitely. I don't know. I guess it's just masturbation in a way, so it doesn't even have to define itself as sexuality. It really can just be that. It can be like, this is yourself, so you're all good. If that's what they need to justify it as. But I mean, it's not like we can really conceptualize how this works, because we're not of the sensate world. We're not of that mind. Anyways, if we had said anything that upset you this episode, which, yeah, I would understand that. Upset, not upset at you. So you can write in about that too. Or if we made you really happy by talking about your favorite character, you can reach us at our email, rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter, @re_watchable. Our Tumblr, rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We love your 5-star reviews on iTunes. And this week, if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will sing soft Icelandic songs to ease your woes. That will be very pleasant. Karen has a great singing voice, I'm sure. I don't say that sarcastically. I think she has probably a good singing voice. So now we want to get into our listener feedback for this week. And our first tweet, Brittany.
See, like I said at the top of the episode, I don't look at the doc until I can't find it.
Keeping you on your toes.
Our first tweet comes from This Is The Queer Place at Nurse Brack, who says, I should preface this by saying I put out a question on Twitter, which was, hey, we're about to finish Sense8 season 1. What was your favorite thing about it? And this is a response to that tweet. And Nurse Brack says, love that last shot where you see the 8 of them together for the first time. And the shot was beautiful. And I loved that the shot went around the boat. And then by the time it gets all the way back around, it's just Riley.
Oh, it's so great.
That's really
cool. My God, that was $1 million shot. I can't imagine.
Amazing. When I finished it, though, after watching, you know, Netflix has the special explaining how they film it. And then after that, every time I watch that shot, I just envision the entire cast just like falling to their knees and crawling really fast back into the cabin.
I thought you were going to say jumping into the water.
As soon as I saw that they weren't there, I was like, they're all definitely just laying on the ground right now. And then I was thinking, like, I kept watching each of them because I'm like watching the boat and I'm like, I would be so sick right now. So one of them has to be puking over the edge. And so I was like watching all of them. And then all of a sudden when it came back around, I'm like, they are literally laying, like they hit the deck as soon as they had to.
That's funny. I never would have put that together if you guys didn't point it out. That's cute. And then Nassim, our next tweet.
So Melanie from, oh my God, I can't read. @MelanieLynn815.
Some of the letters are upside down or backwards. It's thank you, Melanie.
Yeah, I wasn't going to read that part. Oh, well. Okay. So first watch, she says like her first watch, her reaction was Riley and a crying emoji. And then the rewatch reaction was Riley with 3 exclamation points and an even more intense crying emoji. And I completely agree.
Same. Our last tweet.
So Ashley Stucklin @AStucklin says, I loved rewatching with all of you. It was interesting watching the show week by week for the first time. I personally loved the slower pace and build up to that final shot. I would call it a nice teaser for season 2.
Ooh. I'm sure that means something that I can't comment on. Now, we do have an email from Nandri, and they discussed, I'll read the first paragraphs so you guys can get a teaser. And I believe, Brittany, you said you wanted to make it accessible to read for the rest of our listeners. So However you would care to do that, I'm sure you'll tweet out. They wrote in for these first two paragraphs. I absolutely adore Sensei and was thrilled to come back across your podcast a few days back discussing this show. I look forward to the future episodes and many more enjoyable discussions. Being Indian, I found the discussion about Hinduism and Kala's horrible father-in-law last week to be interesting and had a few thoughts. So yeah, we're just going to keep that for something to read because it does go into some interesting history and culture ideas. So
I'm going to post it on the Tumblr and
there you go.
Find it there.
we do have an iTunes review here from JD Fan who has written in before to us. They said, amazing podcast, smiley face, 5 stars. This is an update from my previous review. I am currently still really enjoying this podcast. I've been enjoying for a while now. I'm really enjoying the Sense8 run. So fun and great discussion. Thank you, JD Fan. We appreciate the 5-star review. And now we're going to go into the last part of our episode, Brittany's brainstorms and Caitlin's conjectures for Sense8201. Happy fucking New Year.
Well, that sounds like it could be interpreted both lots of fucking and also really sarcastically.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with there's lots of fucking and also people have a bad day.
Yeah. I mean, knowing Sense8, that's pretty much the show.
Yeah. like you're supposed to be like, happy new year, like great possibilities. But I feel like these people are just like, well, happy fucking new year. Like, here we are again. That's definitely the read that I also got on it. But then I did see, of course, because Netflix sucks, that the image for this episode is our Twitter image. So I'm kind of excited to see all of them together again, maybe, if that's even a shot or if it was just done for publicity. I don't know. But yeah, I think that it's going to be a mix of resolutions to some of the things that we were a little bit not happy with in this episode, mainly because earlier in our discussion, you guys kind of hinted that it would be. It's an hour and a half episode and in response to possibly tying some things up. So I'm hoping that we get a few things wrapped up. Maybe some of the stuff that we talked about in our predictions. But I agree with you, Caitlin. I'm taking it as a lot of actual fucking and then being miserable about the fact that they're still dealing with some stuff.
I guess you're just going to have to wait 2 years. Didn't we wait 2 years for season 2 to properly start?
Nassim, yes, I think we did, and it was the worst.
But this probably came out like a year after season 1. I don't remember.
Yeah, I remember when it came out.
Was it like on New Year's Day?
It was close. I think it was late December.
Yeah.
I know where it was at the time. I think it was like 2016.
Yeah, and I think the first season premiered in 2015, so that would make sense. Yeah.
It was intense, but at least back then we knew it was going to get renewed at that point.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And we'll definitely get
bitter. I'm always going to be bitter about this show.
That's fine. That's why we do rewatchable about it. yeah, and we'll get into season 2 soon enough, starting with Happy Fucking New Year for next week. But for this week, we're all going to sign off. I'm Mitch.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Nassim.
And I'm Brittany. We did it.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.